Well, each year on Rainy Day at the Betch, we have at some point a guest to whom the old line needs no introduction really applies. But then we'd miss the opportunity to truncate a lifetime of struggle, dedication or achievement into a few trite sentences, and one of the producers would also probably have to go. Today's guest then, by any measure, this country's most successful actor. 50 films under his belt, from Sleeping Dogs through Jurassic Park and currently Little Fish. At his Central Otago vineyard and farm, he describes himself simply as the proprietor. He is, of course, Sam Neill. Good morning.
Good morning, Todd.
Gosh, 50 films. Do you sit
there? Yes, and a whole lot of other stuff too. Oh. No, I don't, but there are people who look at the net and they always stagger me with whatever I've done. But I like being busy, you know, idle hands and all that.
Yeah. You started off sort of learning the trade with the National Film Unit.
Yes, I was thinking, actually, what you end up doing is as much a process of elimination as anything, and it was clear at an early age that I wasn't going to be a brain surgeon, and I had no future in sport. And then I applied for things, and I did apply for Radio New Zealand too, and I flunked out there. You see, I could have been your lackey, but no, I wanted to be in the news. You know, I wanted to be a news reporter or something like that, but they wouldn't have me. And I wanted to be an editor at TVNZ. They wouldn't have me either. So I suppose I owe them a vote of thanks, really, because I ended up doing something I probably enjoyed more.
So then when you got into the making of films, from what you're saying before, obviously the intention is always to somehow get on the front side of the camera.
Well, yes. I mean, it was pretty difficult to find enough work as an actor when I thought I'd like to be an actor, which is to say when I left university. And I did have a crack at radio drama too, and they weren't very interested in me either. So I thought, let's have a go at documentary filmmaking, because I had a couple of friends. John Lang was one of them, and they were working for the National Film Unit. It looked like a breeze, and I started there, and I really enjoyed it. The pay wasn't much. I was on $70 a week, but I did get a pretty good grounding in film, and I sort of get back to the other side of the camera from time to time, and I'd like to do more, but, you know, time.
What was the one then? What was the being in front of the camera moment then that you decided, no, this is where I really want to be out here?
I don't think I had one of those. It was just that Roger Donaldson asked me to do Sleeping Dogs, and I thought, well, crikey, $2,000. No, maybe it was less than that. Maybe it was $1,000. But I was on about, instead of $70 a week, I was on about $200 a week. I thought, this is fantastic. I can make a fool of myself in front of the camera and be really, really well paid. So I jumped at that. I owe Roger a vote of thanks too, I suppose.
Were you surprised at the reception that film got at the time?
Well, I'm not sure what sort of reception it got. I took it to Melbourne, for instance. People liked it in New Zealand. And I took it to Melbourne, and that's why I started working in Australia. I had a press conference in Melbourne, to which one reporter turned up, and he'd made a mistake. He was a sports reporter. So it didn't get much of a showing in Australia, but it did get me a job there, and I sort of jumped at that. And from then on, that was 1979, I think, I lived outside of this country, you know, in Australia and England a lot, and in the States for over 20 years, something like that. And I came back to live here again about 7 or 8 years ago.
You've got your career seems to be largely on the Australian side, is it, in the vineyard and the farm back here?
When you say Australia, I'm just off to South Africa, and then I'm going to Belgium to do a film there, and then to Scotland after that. So there's a bit of Australia in there. And I do like working in Australia. I like Australians. There's a weird sort of anti-Australian thing that runs through the New Zealand character that I've never quite understood, because when we go to Bondi, we really enjoy our lives here. And I've always felt we've got a great deal in common with Australia. And it's always been very good to me. The Australian film industry is always very good to me. And I kind of owe them a vote of thanks too.
From what you're saying about what you're up to now, I don't know how many projects there were in that description, but obviously setting up the vineyard was not to ease up and do a movie a year and enjoy the good life.
Well, it's a vineyard, plus, you know, we've got chooks and pigs and all kinds of things going on, and we grow lavender. And again, I suppose it's because I don't really like to be too still too much. I always thought of myself as being a rather lazy person, and then when you tell me I've been in 50 films and, you know, there's many other television things and so on, it looks like I've actually been quite hard at work. So perhaps there's some sort of pathetic Protestant work ethic that's been getting to me all that time, and I've been ignoring it.
So how does the balance go at the moment between films and acting and time around the farm in Central Otago?
I suppose I spend about a third of the year here, and I must say I really love it here. And I don't really feel as comfortable anywhere else in the world as I do in New Zealand. This is where I'm sort of bedded down.
Was a vineyard and so on, was that a way to enjoy that lifestyle, or were you a bit of a wine buff from way back?
More of a pisshead, I'd think. I love wine, and I sort of grew up with wine. There was wine in the house at home, and my father always used to say, you know, I don't know why no one grows wine in Central Otago, and then they started to, and I had a few acres, and I put some vines in, and it's all worked out rather well. It's something I dearly love, and I love poddling around my vineyard, and I'm not terribly kind of knowledgeable about it. I have people who know things down there, and I'm the person who doesn't know anything, but they allow me on the lawnmower. And I think there's one thing, when you get to my age, you take a great comfort in a ride-on mower.
Yeah, yeah. So have you picked up much? I mean, if they all got the huff and left you one day and said, make your own wine, could you, could you produce a barrel or two?
No, I don't think I could, really. But that's why young people go to places like Lincoln College, so that old people like me can enjoy the fruits of their labour.
Ah, exactly. Look, we'll have a bit of a chat in a moment about some of the projects and so on that you're involved, but we're up to your first piece of music now. What is it, and where does that one come from?
Well, when I was a kid, we didn't really go to the Batch. We went camping with mixed results, I had to say, because my father, my family in general, are not practical people. So there was a fair amount of disasters that went with it. But I do remember going to a Batch in 1966 with a bunch of friends to Kaiteriteri, and at the time the Beach Boys were thumping away with Good Vibrations, and that was a sort of signature tune for that summer. And those people are still my friends today, so it sort of takes me back.
I love the colorful clothes she wears and the way the sunlight plays upon her hair. Smile, I know she must be kind. In her eyes, she goes with me to a blossom moon.
I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me excitations. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's by my
Yeah.
Good Vibrations by the Beach Boys, the first musical choice by our guest on Rainy Day at the Batch, actor, winemaker, Sam Neill. Keen on the Beach Boys, aren't you?
I've always had a great passion for the Beach Boys, and Brian Wilson in particular, and it was a great, great moment for me when I saw Brian tour the world with Smile, which was his great unproduced masterpiece, which he finally got to record about 4 or 5 years ago. And then I saw him do it at the Sydney Opera House. I had my friend Tony Backhouse, great New Zealand musician, with me, and it was a wonderful, terribly moving night for me.
Your own career, you've started off in some of those pioneering films like Sleeping Dogs, you've been through the blockbuster Jurassic Park thing. Do you get picky now about what you do, or do you just like the process of acting no matter what it is?
Look, I love what I do, and I'm not a great theoretician about acting, but I think it's something between making things up and telling the truth. And there are times when you're on the set and you've done something that you think is good, and my acid test is, have I told the truth or not? And sometimes you get those kind of insights into yourself, into the script, into writing, into sort of humanity in general. What I'm saying is that's kind of taken my job reasonably seriously, and I do enjoy it. If I didn't enjoy it, I'd do something else. I'd learn how to make wine properly.
So when a script or a project comes past you, do you look for something particular in it?
Well, it has to sort of speak to me. I get a lot of scripts, and some of them send me to sleep, and I realize if I'm nodding off in the middle of it, it's not going to work for me, and it probably won't work for an audience. But the part itself has to sort of kind of speak to me. And I was just reading something this morning, and I thought, oh, this is a really, really interesting script, but the part itself is dullness, you know. And sometimes you get sent those dull parts, and I just don't know what to do with it, and it's better if someone else has a crack at it and does it some justice.
All right. Now, you've got a company with John Clark, who, sadly, 30 years on, probably still best remembered as Fred Dagg. Is that a bit of a full cycle, that you're trying to do your own Australasian, New Zealand, Australian-type movies a bit more?
Yes, we did a project a couple of years ago in which John adapted a couple of novels. And I'm looking forward to TVNZ, who've got the tapes in their basement and are languishing on them. But we were very happy with those. John's one is called Stiff, and mine's called The Brush Off. They both star a very good actor called David Wenham, and lots of other actors in them that I think Joel Tobick, for instance, is a wonderful actor from this country, and we both act in each other's films. That was a really good project. John's working on a couple of other things, and I am too at the moment. It's kind of nice to have your hands on the reins once in a while.
When you look around the New Zealand film industry now, you know, if you want to compare it to the Sleeping Dogs era, have we really come as far as we should have?
I think we've come an enormous way, and right at this particular moment, New Zealand cinema seems to be dominating the world. We've got King Kong out there, and we have Narnia. We're the biggest show in town at the moment. How did that happen? It's amazing.
I mean, below those blockbusters is the ongoing indigenous film industry as healthy as you'd want it to be?
Well, I think there's quite a bit going on. And for instance, I'm looking forward to Tua Fraser's film number 2, which is going to, I think, Sundance and then Berlin. And by all accounts, it's absolutely fantastic. So, yeah, there's quite a bit going on. These big blockbusters employ a tremendous amount of people. They're terribly good for the morale of the country, and they do sort of rub off into small cinema too.
Mm. You've popped up from time to time in the headlines with views on things from Te Papa to New Zealand being a little bit miserable. Are your views on New Zealand being taken out of context, or do you get a bit impatient with it from time to time?
Oh, people love to take you out of context, and I suppose I do put my hand up once in a while about certain issues. I think there's quite a few rogues around, really, and the rogues will get away with whatever they can get away with. So it's incumbent on all of us to, you know, if you see something that's horrendous, you should say something. And I think there is this kind of attitude that if you're an actor, your place is in New Idea or Women's Weekly, and you shouldn't really have a brain or views on things. Well, that's not something I subscribe to.
Mm. So, I mean, when you fronted the opening of the Labour Party campaign, was that sort of intentionally boxing out of the cliche, or?
Yeah, so it wasn't something I was very comfortable with, to be honest. I don't see myself as being part of politics, or I'm not actually attached to the Labour Party. I don't belong to it. But I did think that it was a very critical election, and I remain extremely grateful to Helen Clark and this government. They kept us out of Iraq, because I think That was a very courageous and difficult thing to do, and absolutely the right decision. So that's why I swung in behind them.
You're a bit of a rugby buff as well. What about Tana Umanga going? Does that give you any cause for concern in the World Cup campaign?
Well, I'm heartbroken because he was a wonderful captain, Tana, and a great New Zealander. And I think he was really good for this country. You know, marvellous to have a Pacific Island New Zealander in the top job in the country. That's good for all of us. The World Cup, well, you know, it always worries me that we peak in between, and we're really peaking at the moment. What a fantastic year we've had. That Grand Slam was an extraordinary achievement. I grew up in a country, you know, where rugby dominated everything. It doesn't anymore. And that's probably why I'm interested in it. I really had no interest in rugby as a kid, but I've become in the last 10 years a tremendous fan, and I love the All Blacks, and I'm really optimistic about this next World Cup, and I think Richie would be a wonderful captain too. But you know, my thanks to Tana, what a wonderful contribution he's made to this country.
Now, Tana, this is a dreadful link into the next issue, but you run your own awards at two paddocks at your vineyard there, a little annual handing out of bottles. Have you given much, is that going to happen this year? Have you given much thought to who might be on the list?
Yes, it's time for that again, isn't it? I'll certainly be sending off a case to Tana.
Ah.
I sort of spread it among the arts and the sports. Yes, Tana will be first up for a case of two paddocks this year.
Mm. Any other names that are being pondered, or is it early days yet?
Oh, well, I sent a case to the Prime Minister after the the victory of sorts in the election.
Ah.
I hope she'll be declaring it on her gift list this year.
Excellent. Now, the summertime, do you normally try and spend summer around Queenstown, Central Otago area?
Yes, I do. I love it down here at this time of the year. It hasn't been a great January, but December was absolutely magnificent down here. And I think when the weather's good, when the northerly's not blowing, there is no finer place on earth.
Is there a sort of a time, you know, X number of months overseas where you've got to get back and put your foot on the land again?
Look, I come back whenever I can, really. And sometimes, you know, I won't see a summer for 3 years in a row. It's just work rather dictates where I am, and my kids too.
And work, what's on the boil this year?
The only thing I can tell you with any certainty, because there's lots of other things that are sort of uncertain, is I'm about to work with a French director called François Ozon, who I liked. He made a film called The Swimming Pool, which I liked very much. Playing opposite Charlotte Rampling in this.
Set in some European setting?
Yes, it's actually set in England, but, film is an odd beast, and we'll be shooting it in Belgium and making it as much look like it as much as we possibly can.
Oh, well, that's a concept that's been great for the New Zealand film industry. Now we're at the point where we need to do your second and final piece of music. What's the story behind this one?
Well, this is Luckiest Man. This is by my great friend Tim Finn. It's a beautiful, beautiful love song. If you're going to the Batch and it is going to be rainy, and it usually is because we live in New Zealand and it's a wet place and blows a lot, it's better to have a bloke there with a guitar, or two blokes preferably. And I've just been up to Piha and the Finn boys were there, and we had a bit of a sing-along once in a while. We didn't do this song because I don't think we could do it justice.
Sam Neill, thanks for joining us for Rainy Day at the Batch, and we'll end with Luckiest Man live.
I know that it's you behind everything that I do, and I wouldn't try to hide who I am from you. It's only that you see I was ready for another try, but I needed you to set me free. Must be the luckiest man alive. Man finds love in his life. He's the luckiest man alive. Someone true by his side. He's the luckiest man alive. She cut right through his foolish pride. He's the luckiest man alive. Time before leaving things where they fell, I was going door to door, always thinking I was somewhere else. You saw me and what I could be, and now I know
the only thing sets you free. Must be the luckiest man alive. Man finds love.
Finn Brothers winding up Sam Neill's appearance on Rainy Day at the Batch.